Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
And welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. I'm in a very, very cozy and very, very good restaurant in a central Swiss resort called Engelberg, E-N-G-E-L-B-E-R-G, and it means literally Angel Mountain. And it's good to see across the table from me someone I've worked with before. You never change, Charlie. Charles Christen, who is with the Engelberg Tourist Office. And he's also, I found out here just a few minutes ago, the deputy mayor of Engelberg. Congratulations, you really are proliferating.
Thank you very much. And I have not changed. I just got gray hairs like others as well.
Well, we know each other too because you have a broadcasting background. You're a man of many talents and many facets. Engelberg, Angel Mountain. Charles, that is significant because it is really religion, in the broadest sense of the word, which first put Engelberg on the map, right?
Yes, that was the monastery. It is a Benedictine monastery, founded in 1120. And the monastery is actually also the first promoter for tourism in Engelberg, which we say started about 1850 when the first hotels were being built and when visitors who used to come to the monastery then also stayed here in hotels.
They say that monasteries were built in spiritual places, and you know, I came up by train from Lucerne, from the Emmental where I live. I just took the 1 hour train trip to Lucerne and then I changed trains. It's exactly 1 hour by train up here, and you go through a really adventurous trip to come up here. It's a very narrow valley with some breathtaking scenery. You see beautiful woods, you see streams and rivers, you see cliffs and mountains. It really is God's country here, and I can understand why the early monks came out here, because you really are off the beaten path. You have to work your way into Engelberg, don't you?
Yes, actually the community of Engelberg starts at Grafenort, which is down in the valley. The monastery still has a building there. It's used at the moment as a vacation home for the monks, but it's also used as a retreat.
People can go there still and stay.
Yes, people can go there and stay there. And so it actually started there at the Herrenhaus in Grafenort. And we just mentioned the trip from there up to Engelberg. You mentioned the woods and the rivers, and this still belongs all to the monastery.
Yeah, and you come in on the train and you see this narrow valley and you feel very lonely in a way. You're really out there in nature. Then all of a sudden you get to Engelberg Station and the whole thing opens up. And there is this large village, we could say really a town, right here. And you have all the conveniences. It's highly civilized and you have everything here.
I hope so. We are civilized. And you only feel lonely for about 15 or 20 minutes on the way to Engelberg from Grafenort.
Who do you have coming here these days? What is a typical mix of nationalities coming to Engelberg?
It's mainly Europe. The Swiss percentage is about 40% of all our visitors coming from Switzerland. And the majority, 60%, is coming from abroad. It's Europe, but it's also America. And during the last few years, it's people coming from India or the Far East.
Yeah, in fact, there's an Indian, it's called almost an Indian village here, where you get hundreds of people from India coming every year, and they live there, they eat Indian food. It's almost like an Indian embassy, isn't it?
Yes, the Titlis Cableways, they rented the hotel terrace. The hotel terrace was the previous hotel where the Club Mediterranee stayed, and it's a hotel for about 400 people. And so they rented this hotel throughout the summertime to a travel agent in India, and the hotel is practically fully booked from end of April to the middle of September.
Mm-hmm. Now let's look at the attractions, both summer and winter here in Engelberg, because Engelberg is indeed an all-weather and certainly an all-year-round destination. Let's look at the high points. Let's start with summer.
Yes, summer has changed a little bit. It has become more active for sport you can do. It's more adventure sport. It's hiking, it's biking, it's not only walking.
You can even rent mountain bikes here very easily.
Yes, you can, and they have bungee jumping if you want to do the bungee.
The extreme stuff.
They have extreme stuff, yes.
You got the mountains to go with it, too.
Yes, we do, yes. People still come to the mountain. The mountain itself is very attractive, and the surrounding, the scenery of Engelberg, it's very, very nice indeed. And we have the glacier-covered mountain of Mount Titlis, so people see throughout the year summer, ice, and snow.
But it doesn't mean you forget the older generation. They also find peace and quiet and something for them here.
Oh, and we don't forget about the older people, because Engelberg is an old established resort. And
it has a tradition.
Has a tradition. And within the tradition, we do have young people and elderly people. And so we do care for a lot of people. We are not just marketing-wise attached to a certain kind of people. So it's cultural is also very, very important here in Engelberg, with the master classes in music at the monastery. And so the culture and the care for older people is very important. And we also still have the concert which we used to have 40, 50, 60 years ago. We just started again with the concert. People appreciate this very much.
You mentioned the monastery again. I think you have different events that go on in there. You mentioned, of course, the famous now traditional concerts, and I know you're very connected with the cultural life of the town. You're very personally involved in that. Also, I think there's a cheese dairy. People can go and watch cheese being made there, right?
Yes, this has become very popular. We can every day throughout the year, you can go and watch how they produce cheese, not the big cheese, not the Sprint's cheese anymore, but the little cheese, and this has become very, very popular right within the monastery.
What about golf? I understand for those people, and there are always more of them, you have good news for them.
We just opened an 18-hole golf course. People do enjoying very much, because to be on 1,050 meters gives us a chance to play golf until the middle of the month of October.
Now, in the last few moments, you've been using a word that we have to dwell on and clarify. It is what you would call in German the House Mountain. You're intimately identified with it here in Engelberg, and that's the Mount Titlis. You have to be careful how you pronounce that. That's actually the way it is. T-I-T-L-I-S. We didn't invent it. That's really the name of the mountain. And it has nothing to do with what you think. But that is an adventure in itself. It must bring a lot of people to Engelberg, because the valley station, the point of departure, is right here in the village. And it's quite an adventure getting up. It's in four stages, I understand. And one of them even involves the world's first rotating gondola.
The rotating gondola is on the last section from 2,450 meters up to 3,000 meters. And this is actually the trip to Mount Titlis is very attractive. And we are the closest. It's the closest and the highest mountain you can reach from Lucerne or from Zurich for excursion, for daily excursion. And as I mentioned it before, you have ice and snow up there all the year round, and this is something what people, when they come to Switzerland, they really want to come and see where the ice in the glacier is.
You have some expert ski slopes up there. You shouldn't be a beginner if you want to ski up there, right?
We can start to ski earlier in the season, so if the weather is okay, we start around the middle of September. We already start to ski up on Mount Titlis.
Now, this is high mountain skiing, so you have to be prepared for it. There's also, for those who don't want to ski, you can just go up and enjoy the restaurant up there, right? And the view, of course.
The view and the restaurant, and is even some shopping up there. So as people do come just for the day, we have a lot of facilities where people have just for an hour and a half, where they really have time to do shopping and what that they can buy, what they do expect to buy in Switzerland.
Skiing is obviously the number one sport here in the winter, and you have lots of possibilities. This is a giant region. You can base yourself in Engelberg, and you can ski from here, or you can go around to other areas. But what other kinds of winter sports are available here and activities?
Well, skiing is also snowboarding.
That's big, isn't it?
That's big, has become big, and then besides this, we do have also, which is unusual, we have a toboggan run, because Engelberg was...
coming back, isn't it?
It's coming back, because we used to be a bobsleigh resort, and the Feierabend bobsleigh, he was the man from Engelberg, was 7 times world champion.
That was invented here.
Yes, and this still is today a tobogganing run, and tobogganing has become more and more popular for younger people, for families, and we really do care about this run from 1,350 meters from Kirchnealp down to Engelberg, 1,050 meters.
You mentioned the word family. I think there's no question that Engelberg has traditionally been a very family-friendly resort.
Yes, because children are the best promoter for tourism, and we really do care about it, because if the people like it in a resort, they always want to come back.
Well, that reflects also in the accommodations available here. You have, of course, a number of very fine hotels with great tradition, but you also have a lot of family vacation apartments.
Yeah, we do have a special reservation system, and you can just phone the tourist office here in Engelberg, and we can make the direct reservation for vacation homes, or also for dormitory accommodation, all kinds of also inexpensive accommodations.
And one thing which I am reminded of every time I come to Engelberg, we had a lovely lunch in the restaurant Engelberg, which is appropriate enough, and it reminds me of the very, very high quality standard of gastronomy in this part of Switzerland, and Engelberg has a very good name for it. You've even won awards.
Fine food on a traditional basis, I would say. We really do care about the food, which we do eat here also throughout the year. You should stick to your own tradition.
I want to give you a few seconds in your own words to say what's special about Engelberg and what distinguishes it from some other places in this country.
The secret of Engelberg is actually that when once you get attached to Engelberg, you always stay attached to it. And when I talk to people who stayed here, who bought condominiums here in Engelberg, say, why do you come to Engelberg? First, they said, it's easy to get to, and you feel really at home. You don't have to pretend to be somebody. You are somebody here in Engelberg. I think this is about the secret for people who come to Engelberg, and also for us. I just live here now for the last 50 years, and I intend to stay here until the very end.
Charles Christen with the tourist office of Engelberg in central Switzerland, and also the deputy mayor. You have sold your village well. Thank you so much. Three people will be joining me. We have the Reverend Patrice de Metrel. He is a Protestant minister in Zurich who has been taught and practices in the famous Zwingli tradition of Zurich. Al Schalk studied to be a Roman Catholic priest as a younger man. He gave up the study of the priesthood and turned instead to writing. Gora Lila Dasa, his civil name is Guido von Arx, a native Swiss who was born in the canton of Solothurn, a traditionally Roman Catholic canton, who abandoned Catholicism in favor of Hinduism. To be specific, Vaishnava Hinduism, which in the Western world takes the form of the Hare Krishna movement. What they have in common is that all of these men have drifted away, if that's the right word, or have chosen to depart from the mainstream. Reverend Patrice de Metrel in Zurich,
You operate in the city of Zurich what is known as a coffee house church. What is a coffee house church?
Well, we try to invite people to come and be as they are without having to know something about theology or religion, but share their search for meaning with others on common day subjects. We have done that for over 10 years and reached a couple hundred people in various groupings.
You have had experience with the drug scene, not as a drug user, but as a pastor. You have dealt with all kinds of the social milieu, as it's referred to, in the city of Zurich. You are also a prison chaplain. You have been a military chaplain. Do you feel as though the traditional church is not reaching the people the way it should?
Unfortunately not.
Al Schalk, you were inspired to study the Roman Catholic priesthood. You gave it up. In fact, you go so far as to describe yourself today as a non-practicing Catholic. Although you write for Catholic publications, you maintain very close contacts with not only the Catholic Church, but others. How do you explain this apparent anomaly?
Well, I think it's partly due to the fact that the established church today in many areas has failed. It is too authoritarian, it is too sectarian, it is too denominationally oriented, it is too far removed from the world.
Gorelila, you were born a Roman Catholic. What brought you to make such a dramatic and drastic change in your spiritual and religious directions?
When in my youth, maybe around the time of 15, I gave up the traditional religion practice. It was kind of a general mood among the young people at that time, rejecting these old traditions. Later on, I kind of became a little more thoughtful in seeking for the actual meaning or purpose of life, and then started off a world journey in order to find out about other people and the truth. I was living with Catholic, I was studying with them, I was among Muslims, etc., studying the Quran, ask many questions, but later on I become some or other, maybe it's a question of taste, most convinced and attracted through the presentation of God consciousness to the way it is presented in the Vaishnava Hindu tradition. I found out personally that the Vedic explanation of God, God consciousness, also the meaning of living in this world, is much more profound, much more scientific, and for my searching intellect, much more satisfying than what I've learned in the Christian tradition, let's say the Bible or even the Quran, other books I studied.
Reverend Demetral, do you in principle accept the idea of a born Christian looking for religion and religious salvation in a completely foreign or, let's call it, exotic religious stream?
That is indeed a question for me. I respect people who have gone through this search via India, but like Hermann Hesse, he has done that too. He came back to the Christian tradition, and I think the Christian tradition and the center of its message, this Jesus Christ, is far more dynamic and living than much which has come out of it. One says he preached the kingdom of God, and what came out is a church. And there is indeed a tension between institutionalized forms of religion and the fire and the conviction that behind all this there is a living truth, which to me is still most fascinating.
And that's the truth you're trying to get at the coffee house church?
A truth which is not a knowledge. It's something which you don't have in your pocket, but by approximation you come closer to it. Through sharing of human experiences, because I do believe that this living Christ is present among us, where two or three are gathered together, and surprises us to be present in forms which we wouldn't expect.
Permit me, I hope not too crass an indulgence, to make a point. We have the stereotype of both the Protestant and Roman Catholic churches. The Protestant, the hellfire and brimstone preacher, stands up there stern-looking in a black robe on Sunday, looks down at the congregation and proclaims, "You're all sinners, let us pray, let us sing." And on Sundays in the Roman Catholic Church, people don't know whether to stand, sit, or kneel. They follow what the others are doing because they've lost track of the liturgy years before. They go home, and it's just over again for the next week. Al Schalk, is this religion anymore?
I don't think that is true religion, but I do think we have to be fair. A great many, even traditionalist churches, are making great efforts, at least on the grassroots basis, through liberation theology and also through efforts like the Immensee Missionary Fathers of the Bethlehem Fathers.
Here in Switzerland.
Here in Switzerland, in Immensee, Switzerland. And they were among the very first to contribute vastly to the overthrow of the Ian Smith regime in Rhodesia and turn Rhodesia into Zimbabwe. And without their help, the process of racial integration and equality may not have reached the state that it has today.
But Pope John Paul II doesn't like this mixture of religion and politics.
I know that's the big problem, but a great many people criticize the Pope, especially a number of theologians, notably Professor Hans King of Tübingen. It is his view that the Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and the Vatican needs a perestroika of its own.
I think the crisis is that it's very hard to live what you have been taught, to live it not simply on an ethical way, but if you're convinced that God, if a God is a loving and merciful Father, how do you live this in your own daily life, in your work, in your family? And this is difficult, and this needs a spiritual background, and we Protestants there haven't learned enough what it means to be a spiritual being. And I think there we can gain insights from other religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, which exerts a great fascination because there is more on a meditative background. But there, I think, a lot is being done, particularly in the Roman Catholic traditions. And also the Protestants begin to discover other elements of their faith. And so I'm not so pessimistic that we are going through a crisis, but the crisis is also a chance for rebirth.
The main aspect, or one of the big points in Krishna consciousness, is that, in my opinion, it offers you the most sublime and deepest philosophy. Many questions can't be answered in Christianity, as I personally found. There's just not any relevance in the Bible given. Jesus Christ said, there are many things to tell you, but you can't bear it now. Who is God if you're supposed to love him? How does he look? Where does he live? What are his activities? What is his relationship with his material world? Why we should love him? I think many of these questions are very difficult for Christians to understand, and they have to speculate, which then leads again to a deviation of the original religion. And in that sense, it's watered down. It loses its spiritual power or strength.
Al Schalk, religion seems to be adapting perhaps too much to the modern needs of people, rather than people having to maintain a certain minimum standard of religious behavior. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that it's necessary not only for religion to adapt to society, but in some cases for society to adapt to religious norms. For instance, in a Nazi society, it was the failure of the Christian churches, both Catholic and Protestant, that they didn't react sufficiently to Hitler. So in that case, the church should have implemented its values on a Nazi society. And in other areas, the church has to adapt to society. It seems to me that it's extremely important to do more in the area of social implementation.
But so many changes have been made, alterations, deletions, corrections, as they were euphemistically referred to, for political reasons very often, in the catechism, in the Bible itself. How accurate do you think is the message of Christ today as we read it allegedly in the Bible?
That's a very difficult question to answer. The experts themselves are very divided on this. And I think that's also one of the reasons we have so many religious sects and religious confessions.
And dropouts, I suppose.
Yeah, and dropouts as well. And precisely that's the reason why it's so difficult to understand, for me to understand fundamentalists, is because they're too literal. As Jesus once said, the spirit quickens and the letter kills. And too often fundamentalists stick pretty much to the letter. And the Bible, as experts have shown, is very allegorical. And there are many, many passages and stories in the Bible that were meant in a symbolic way.
Another hot issue, not so hot an issue in Switzerland, where some religious training is included in primary school. But what about societies like, for example, in the United States, where there's such a reaction against any religious consciousness in the public school system? How do you feel on that issue?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a violation of the separation principle to have religious instruction in schools, provided that it is done fairly, and provided it is done more or less apart from the regular curriculum. For instance, if you have for Jewish children, have a Jewish rabbi or instructor, and for Protestants and Catholics, you have corresponding priests or ministers.
Would you think it would be good to have some religious instruction at the childhood level then?
Very much so. I think, in fact, I think it is even very important. Because today more than ever we need religious values in our society.
Gora Lila, how do you feel about this question of accuracy of the Bible?
Yeah, I think from the pure empirical or historical point of view that it will be very difficult to try to prove that the Bible is the teachings of Jesus Christ as it is. You might of course use the same thing for Vedic traditions, Vedic scriptures. And I think there we have better chances because we have what we call the disciplic succession, where these literatures have been passed from spiritual master down to his disciples since very long time. We have these scriptures from more than 5,000 years.
Should we actually be suspicious of the Bible?
No, we don't have to be suspicious of the Bible, but when others pretend that there have been deletions, then I think we need to listen carefully what has been going on. This has come up in the last 10, 20 years, and myself, I'm willing to look at it, but I don't think that it has changed the essence of Christian faith by any means.
I think that's the main point. If you understand the essence of religion, then these social or cultural differences are not that important. And that is actually the message we should have, that what we have in common in all religion, that we have one common Father, who is the personality who's taking care of everyone, and if we come towards him in a loving devotional attitude, the spiritual happiness we're looking for, the peace we're looking for, actually also the problems in the state we're looking to solve, can very nicely be solved if that attitude is there.
So it looks, gentlemen, as though we have a pretty clear idea of our destination, but the only problem seems to be finding the best route to get there. Reverend Dr. Patrice de Metral, a Protestant minister in Zurich, Al Schalk, a former student of the priesthood and Catholic writer, and Gora Lila Dasa, a monk and member of the Hare Krishna movement in Zurich. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts about the relevance of religion in the modern society.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.